morning, folks. It's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the real challenges facing Arizonans. Good morning, folks. I'm back. Steve Williamson here after weeks of programming by Mike and Gary. I think they did an absolutely great job from what everything I hear. I haven't gone through and listened to every single program. But then I had no way to do that anyway. So
well, you didn't, listen. You didn't hang on our every word in Spain.
You don't know what time in the morning I wanted to wake up and listen to this your broadcast in Spain. And Gary's here too.
I'm back from foreign country. Minnesota and Iowa.
Minnesota being the most the most successful economy in the nation. Apparently.
I'm back from the U.S. It was named recently the best business climate, despite its high taxes and everything that Arizona finds despicable. It's been named the best business climate in the United States.
I haven't been following American politics too much, but in Europe, the issues that resonated in Spain were the U.S. Supreme Court decision on gay marriage. And you had huge friendly demonstrations, people walking through the street, waving these rainbow flags and singing songs and stuff. And I don't know. Spain is just very much more informal than the U.S. now. And so I didn't see a lot of police governing. I saw just happy people walking down the street waving flags. And I saw it in like three different cities. So what happens here does have a resonance there. What are we talking about today, Mike?
We're going to talk about the Supreme Court and a sort of a myriad of decisions. We want to talk about, I think, redistricting is a big deal. In other words, not that marriage equality isn't a landmark decision and impactful for the, generations to come and huge. And we'll talk a little bit about that. But redistricting and other Supreme Court decisions.
There's another one based on an Arizona law, Gilbert. So there's two directly Arizona things. So how should we start on this, Mike?
Let's just talk about the redistricting for the decision that allows, by the way, to say what it allows. It allows independent redistricting commissions. Now, there are states in Arizona, the Republicans have been in power so long, the gerrymandering has been common since, the first day that a state ever drew lines, voting districts. But on both sides, by the way.
But Republicans have taken it to a new high art.
They really, really have. They've eliminated... I guess in modern gerrymandering, where you draw the lines according to where the voters live, you can eliminate many, many seats.
Do you guys think that the gerrymandering has been so bad in the United States, not just in Arizona in the past, that it's really undermining democracy?
Without
one person, one vote.
No question.
And so does Ruth Bader Ginsburg and five other Supreme Court judges, four other Supreme Court judges.
For example, in Austin, Texas, which is a very liberal city, they've not had a representative that represents the political attitudes of the city since Tom DeLay led the redistricting effort. They've created these very odd-shaped districts to eliminate the control of liberal Democrats, and it's controlled by, it's represented, if you want to call it that, by a conservative Republican.
It allows for direct democracy, the Supreme Court decision does. The voters of Arizona voted to allow redistricting in 2000. And, of course, the Republican legislature fought it ever since then. We have two Republicans, two Democrats, and one independent who serves as chair. That's our law on redistricting. And this last time, after the 2010 census, the Republicans sued, including our own representative, by the way, who over the weekend redrew the lines after the Independent Redistricting Committee redrew lines, as they were charged to do by the voters and the constant laws of Arizona.
Andy Tobin did it in the basement of the legislature, thinking that he should dictate what the line should be.
The voters, I think it was in 2000, wasn't it, Mike, that they passed a law?
2000, yeah.
That they were tired of this gerrymandering nonsense done by the legislature, and they wanted an independent commission. I mean, they voted. I mean, it was an overwhelming vote, right?
Yes. And after Tobin's weekend
power
grab, where he denied the will of the voters and redrew the lines in a much more favorable Republican way, I called him and we had a little chat. And basically, we talked about that. We didn't resolve anything. He felt that the independent redistricting was unfair.
And he didn't like the results, or
he didn't like the whole result.
They suddenly didn't like the idea when they didn't like the results. As long as the results were in their favor, they seemed happy with it.
And that's when the party wasted once more huge amounts of taxpayer money bringing the case to the Supreme Court.
That's something that's really troubling to me. Is I've never seen a state, and I've lived in several, I've never seen a state so willing to waste taxpayer money in lawsuits, you know, flailing at windmills, you know, lawsuits that have very little chance
for ideological statements.
Exactly.
It is crazy. It is the crazy uncle. I mean, Arizona is the crazy uncle of the United States.
A state so concerned about taxes that, you know, they keep cutting taxes and they want, you know, taxes lower and lower and lower, yet they're willing to spend, you know, millions and millions of dollars on these ideological, you know.
They're ideologues, right? Yeah. They don't care. When it comes to their ideology, they don't care how much of the taxpayers' money they waste.
Well, their kids are in good schools.
Yeah. I was reading an article, and you guys will hate it out there, in the New York Times, and they've done a study of having independent redistricting commissions. And what they found is that when you have them, whether you have them like done with the rules that Arizona sets, or say the rules that California sets. California says you cannot take partisan results into consideration. And Arizona says you should try to be a competitive district. How either way these commissions have done, they've always delivered more competitive districts where people have a real choice in voting. And, so far, the studies show it's very hard to compare these things, but they work. They make for more competitive, more democratic
legislature. And it would be unfair of us, even though the name of the show is Democratic Perspective. And we, as I say almost every week since you've been gone, is we don't pretend to be non-biased. This is a partisan show. As far as I'm concerned.
Although we are sponsored by Democrats of the Red Rocks.
That's right. In modern times, this Democratic Perspective means reasonable, means normal, not completely ideologically out of step with everyone.
But we're fact-based. I think one of the things
California,
we say in our intro is that we try to do fact-based discussions. We don't rewrite the facts in order to get to our point of view, right, Mike?
You're right, and that's when I remind myself of that every week. But in California, the Democrats would have benefited from not, if the decision of the Supreme Court had gone the other way, the Democrats would have benefited.
That's a good point.
Right now, there's 38 Democratic seats in California. There's 15 Republican seats. There'd be even less Republican seats if the Democratic controlled state House could redraw the lines in California.
I think that's exactly right.
If California had chosen, if the vote, the Supreme Court voted gone the other way, and California had chosen to do so, it's so dominated by Democrats that they could have gerrymandered in the way that Texas has done and picked up 15 congressional seats.
That's right.
It was a two-edged sword. You know, the Republicans of Arizona might have gained two seats, by redistricting, you know, there's really district, what is it, what's Ann's district, district two, district one?
Well, district one, isn't it?
And district nine were the two, which is Kirsten Cinemas. Those were the two, that were made more competitive by the recent maps. So potentially, Republicans could have picked up two seats in Arizona and lost 15 in California and elsewhere.
So politically, politically, whatever problem these commissions have, they deliver a better result than allowing the legislator dominated by a particular party to draw the line. Well, you get these absolutely absurd-looking things.
I would love to see a federal law that places a grid over every state, a nice, you know, grid, and say, okay, here, based on your population and all the other constitutional requirements, based on your population, we're going to put a grid on your state. And here's these nice straight lines, and this is your voting. These are your voting districts.
Well, what, Mike, was the reasoning of the people who did the majority decision and the people who did the minority
response? Well, Ginsburg said there's no...
It's just 5-4, am I correct?
Yeah. There's no constitutional provision against direct democracy. If those states want to appoint independent redistricting commissions, then they may do that. If the voters want to appoint or allow independent redistricting commissions, then they can do that. There is no constitutional restriction against direct democracy. And what the other side was trying to argue is that redistricting is given to the state legislature, which it is.
By the Constitution.
By the Constitution.
So they wanted to take a strict interpretation of the wording of the Constitution.
Because the next phrase says that the legislatures can farm that out.
But that was a Republican claim. Their dissenters' claim is that it was we're going to take the Constitution word for word. And you know, never mind that if you actually did that, it would still lean in favor of the independent commission. I thought it was interesting too that in California, you know, that three of the people that submitted briefs to the court
of the court briefs
were former governors of California, Republican governors.
That's right.
Of California. Pete Wilson, I can't even pronounce
George.
George, and Schwarzenegger all filed briefs in favor of retaining the independent redistricting.
Well, that's because the Republicans realize in California that it would be bad for them, right? And
you mean we can't have it both ways?
Yeah. So it varies from state to state. And what did you think of the reasoning of the people opponent? It's really just, we believe in a literal interpretation. Redistricting is given to the legislators. Now, what the legislatures do is something else. What the people ordered the legislature to do, in other words, what happened in Arizona, and I'm going to simplify this. Tell me if I'm wrong, Mike.
Yeah.
Is the legislature said, you guys are doing a terrible job of this.
That's right.
We're taking your power and we're delegating it to the
first independent.
It's our power anyway, right?
The first independent redistricting was fine because the independent chair was a Republican up until a few months before the commission was formed. You understand? She left her, resigned, became an independent. She was a Republican and then became an independent. So they felt like the fix was still in. The Independent Redistricting Commission was still on the Republican side. But when they actually got an independent chair, that's when things went bad. This is so obvious. This is so unprofessional. This is so childish that that they did not get their way with the most recent commission. And don't forget this. This only happens every 10 years, so this isn't exactly headline news every week.
If you look at why the Republicans are so adamant about this, it's we have seven states in the U.S. that have independent redistricting for congressional and legislative offices. We have six that have independent redistricting for legislative offices only. And we have eight others that have some form of independence with regard to redistricting. The Republicans in 2014 picked up a huge number of seats as a result of very serious gerrymandering. And now with this decision, there are numerous states that are feeling free and looking into independent commissions themselves.
Sure, look at the timing. We, 4 years after the census, 2010, we had 30 state legislatures at least that were heavily Republican, and the redrawing of the lines influenced, I'm going to say, hundreds of elections. If the country seems farther right than it is in actuality, this is why. This is why it was so important. This is why this Supreme Court decision, this SCOTUS decision, was so huge. Like I said, marriage equality, and I do want to talk about that, and you, some
but,
of the
but
other
I,
decisions.
There's another case, and that's the one in Alabama. And what they did in Alabama was the same kind of redistricting type of thing, except that they redistricted all the black folks into small areas, reducing their power. In other words, they use the federal law that you try to keep coherent. So if you have an area, say in Arizona, has all the reservations in it, you try to keep it coherent to the interests of special people. So in Alabama, they used it to squeeze out black folks, and I think it was a 5-4 decision against the Alabama redistricting. So it's an issue that's not just in, yeah, it's race and redistricting. It was 5-4, and they based it. So what does this mean? Well, there are rules from the Constitution about how you can redistrict. You're supposed to have approximately the same number of people. You're supposed to
contiguous.
So you can't have one bot over here and then draw another one over there.
Contiguous is relative, though.
Yes.
When you see some of these serpentine, Rorschach tests.
Is correct. If you folks have time, go look at some of these districts.
Well,
they're the most
criteria.
Preposterous looking things you ever saw.
There were six criteria used in Arizona, and the first two were the two that you mentioned. But like you also said, cultural aspects were down there at fourth or fifth, but still on the list. And so that was, city country was on the list.
Yeah. Meaning you couldn't take pieces of the rural districts and put them in with city districts all the time.
Not all the time, right. Right, and then race became a huge thing. So that so you could deny representation of certain races.
And they use it in a number of ways to gerrymander. In some cases they lump all like voters into one district, so they are willing to give up one congressional district in order to gain three others.
Right. It's a game that legislatures controlled by a particular party can play sort of infinitely. They can concentrate voters that they don't like in a few districts, or they can spread them out so that their vote is diluted in a bunch of. So you take a bunch of say there's a liberal city like Austin, you bring the cuts like Austin. You take Austin. And pull out whole pieces of it, and then you eliminate their representation as being Austin.
Yeah, you divide the city and lump their voters in with more conservative voters, so that the Democratic voters have no say at all.
The most important cases seem to be decided 5-4. Conservative majority one side, the liberal minority on the other. Kennedy being the swing vote. There was a case in Arizona in Gilbert, religious signs and free speech. And so the town of Gilbert wanted to control these churches' signs. And that was a 9-0 vote. The Supreme Court said you cannot have ordinances that set different limits for political, ideological, directional signs that violate the First Amendment. You can't shut down people's First Amendment rights. That was a 9-0 vote.
And
so there are some.
And Arizona brought that case to the Supreme Court.
Yes, it did.
This is part of the nuttiness. It's amazing. It can't be denied that there is a faction in Arizona that has that sees this Supreme Court as a chance to get, pardon my French, crazy legislation past.
The current term, cray-cray.
Exactly. Back crap nuts here. So that's why so many Supreme Court cases originate in Arizona. The religious sign case. And then when the Dream Act was passed, Arizona pushed a case all the way to the Supreme Court to deny the rights of the Dreamers. As soon as the Dream Act passed, Arizona came up with all kinds of laws against them.
We're constantly paying millions and millions of dollars to bail out corrupt politicians, like
dear
friend down in Maricopa, our sheriff. It's cost us taxpayers millions and millions of bucks.
I've recently gotten at least two appeals from Sheriff Joe asking for help and paying for his legal costs.
Another nine.
Well, write that check, Gary, to write it today.
Another 9-0 vote where the Supreme Court was unanimous was religious freedom in prison. And Arkansas officials were not allowing a Muslim inmates, male inmates, to grow beards. And the Supreme Court voted 9-0. They have a right to grow a beard in prison. The argument is you can't recognize who they are because they've got a beard. It just didn't go over with the
even
court.
Even in Guantanamo, Gitmo, they allow beards.
There was an 8-1 decision, and I'll give it back to you guys, in the social media and free speech. And somebody was threatening towards his wife with his rap lyrics, and the court voted 8-1. There was one dissent. I believe that was our old friend Clarence Thomas.
For what?
And, well, the argument was that, and it's gone before the court before, is what represents a real threat?
Oh.
You know, and if you say blank, 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 I'm, you know, blah, blah, yeah. You know. But is it really a threat or is it rhetoric? And the famous case, I don't remember which president, it was somebody denounced the president, and they were going to try him for threatening the president, and the court looked at that and said, well, you know, it's just too general. He's given a speech. People laughed when he delivered the line.
Yeah.
And so, nah, it's not going to fly. Well, they did that again, 8-1, in this case where this guy said something nasty. I mean, doesn't mean he's a nice human being. He said something nasty, I think, about his ex-wife. Something sounded threatening. But it court 8-1, you know, is
that's unusual.
Yeah, it is unusual.
There was one that was a 9-0 decision.
That's the religious freedom and free speech. That was the Gilbert one,
and
that's the one of you can't deny inmates wearing a beard. That was 9-0. There may have been one more, Gary, that I kind of missed. But, you know, there have been a lot of decisions. Employment discrimination decision was 8-1. And that was, again, concerned a Muslim woman. And the court ruled that she was not required to tell an employer that she wanted to wear a headscarf and ask for it ahead of time. It had to be on some other basis. It's not that I don't think it's a big ruling, but it was 8-1.
Was that the Abercrombie?
Yes, Abercrombie and Fitch Stores versus Samantha Eloff. And it was a religious accommodation, and she was applying for a job in a children's clothing store owned by the company. And they didn't want her to work there because she wore a headscarf.
It's pretty amazing considering I was just at the Mall of America where there are multiple, you know, women working in various stores. Dozens wearing headscarves. It's so common within the Mall of America.
I believe Abercrombie and Fitch have changed their rule even before the court decision. They made a mistake in the way they handled this, eliminating her from a possibility of employment. I think it was or whatever it was because of it beforehand.
You know, I don't want to have a Supreme Court discussion without mentioning the bat crap crazy. The judges that seem to be so far out there that any semblance of impartiality. And I'm starting with Scalia. We can spend weeks talking about Scalia, Thomas, and
Alito.
Alito, thank you.
But we're going to start with Scalia.
I think Scalia is a good choice.
Equating homosexuality and murder. You know, the quote is that that there are bans against both. He said, if we cannot have moral feelings against homosexuality, can we have moral objections to murder? So he's equating these two things.
He wasn't willing to accept the dissent by, you know, the approved dissent. He wanted to go off on his own.
That's
and
right.
Have his own dissent to the case.
He's, I guess, I have never seen a judge, and I don't know that in this century we've had a judge who's nastier and more personal in his attacks.
Well, and so biased, so publicly biased. And so he talks, he was given an interview about how easy his job is. And this is, he's, the death penalty is easy. Give me a break. It's easy. Abortion? Absolutely easy. Nobody ever thought the Constitution prevented restrictions on abortion, Scalia added. Homosexual? Come on. For 200 years, it was a criminal in every state. The whole concept of judicial impartiality goes out the window with this Supreme Court justice.
His rhetoric is about as non-judicial as rhetoric gets. I mean, we have people who are conservative on the court, but they're more careful in what.
Well, that's
they say.
I understand they're pretending to be impartial, but you got to pretend.
Well, Clarence Thomas never says anything on the court. You know.
Pretty much, he has some dissents where it's. He seems to never want the government involved in any kind of racial fairness. So I believe that 8-1 decision on employment discrimination, whether you can discriminate in employment, the dissenting vote was Clarence Thomas. It's one of the things that he does.
And we shouldn't forget that Thomas, by every other standard of federal courts, should have recused himself from anything dealing with the Affordable Care Act because his wife was intimately involved in the opposition.
Major opponent.
To the act. And he was very vocally supportive outside the court.
Very dubiously funded lobbying group, didn't she have, Gary?
Yes. And any other level of the federal court system, he would have been forced to recuse himself. But in Supreme Court, he didn't have to.
In the 240-year history of the United States, only 17. So we're talking about how do we get rid of these guys? I looked this up because I want. That's not always the way you want to go. Impeachment is complicated and almost always political, but there are times, and I think a guy that is this obviously biased publicly constantly, and he is this loony.
We could do what Pat Robertson did with the previous court. He would have prayer over the radio on his family network, praying for the death of one of the liberal justices, so that they could get a court that would be more amenable to his purposes.
Holy cow!
I used to listen to that repeatedly, driving across parts of Minnesota. And
that
Iowa.
Doesn't seem very Christian.
I always thought that was a little bit stunning, but that went on for years. That they wanted to get rid of the activist judges. And, you know, in the term activist,
man,
again,
there's nothing more activist than what's going on now.
Is again relative. You know, if it depends on who's ox is being gored.
But yeah, just the 1804 is the only time we ever impeached a sitting Supreme Court judge, a guy named Chase, and all the experts agree it was purely political, and somehow got through. Most of us understand the impeachment process from Clinton's days. You know, the trial in the Senate, the vote in the House, both things have to happen. But the impeachment process works for any federal officer. So usually the moves against federal officers in this case would be federal judges Only 17 have been ever attempted. Impeachment proceedings have been started. Only 7 have actually been removed.
In the entire history of the country?
In history, entire history.
Okay.
Usually they quit. Uh-huh. You know, once impeachment proceedings start.
So what can we do? We have a guy like Scalia who starts out very, very far to the right. And the longer he's on the court, and I'm sorry to say, the older he gets, the nastier he gets, the more extreme, and the more he doesn't seem to listen to judicial arguments anymore.
He
just votes his whatever he wants to vote, and it's getting pretty obvious.
He seems to have contempt for his peers, for the other justices now. He's always been referred to as, I can't remember the term, but as a strict, going by the exact wording of the Constitution. He would follow that completely and has always believed there was no room for interpretation.
Right. So there's the decision on gay marriage. Which, when I was in Spain, there are people walking through the street celebrating it. It hit internationally. It had an international plan thing, but it was a big Supreme Court decision. And I think Scalia's argument. I've got a little piece of what he said here. The thing is that in tradition, marriage has been between a man and a woman. One man, one woman for a very, very long time. And it has been the dominant view. It hasn't been the only view, but it's been a sort of dominant view. And people ignore different tribal ideas of what marriage is and so forth and so on. But it's been the dominant view. The problem is the Constitution is separate from English common law and the traditions of English common law. And whatever you think of decision, there's just no basis in the Constitution to discriminate against somebody you can't pull out part of the Constitution that you can argue that it's okay. So Scalia's argument is they have discovered in the 14th Amendment, and that's the amendment against discrimination and equal application of the law, a fundamental right overlooked by every person alive at the time of ratification and almost everyone else in that time. Justices know that limiting marriage to one man or one woman is contrary to reason. They know the institution as old as government itself, accepted by every nation in history until 15 years ago, cannot possibly be supported by anything other than ignorance or bigotry. That's accusing the other members of the court of just deciding to do this. But the arguments against allowing marriage equality are basically unconstitutional. I mean, they're basically argue they're old states' rights thing. The legislature should decide this instead of the court. The states should decide this instead of the federal government. We don't want to go that far. We're getting too far ahead of the common wheel. They're all, in some ways, old-fashioned anti-federal government arguments.
It goes back to the Confederacy.
Confederate, doesn't it?
Much of the states' rights was based on the southern states demanding, the ones that seceded, demanding rights to maintain slavery.
And the thing is that there's just no basis in the Constitution for setting aside one group of people, you know, who are homosexual and giving them different rules about marriage and stuff. Not only them, but their kids and their grandkids.
Yeah, either we're equal or we're not.
Yeah.
You know?
And so when the conservative justices are arguing against it, it's really, they can't find anything in the Constitution to justify this. They can find a tradition in common law.
That's what's hilarious. These strict constitutionalists reached outside the Constitution for their argument against marriage equality.
Yes.
I have to throw in one more Scalia quote. He was quoted on Fox News talking about, you know, what a believer in gun rights he is, and that he believes that maybe a cannon might be outside, but not a rocket launcher. I mean,
how about an atomic or a nuclear device?
Well, yeah. He said maybe a cannon might be outside of the right to carry.
You know, so,
but
so
not a rocket launcher.
We've gone too far, in my opinion. When you can go out and purchase a 50 caliber sniper rifle that will put a hole in an engine block.
Well,
from a thousand
go half
yards.
A mile away or
you
whatever.
Know, who needs that outside of war?
So even Justice Roberts, who's the moderate kind of disguised conservative, he's moved the court very far to the right. Although Roberts' big interest is in protecting corporate interests. And you can see that when there's a corporate interest like the pollution case that came before the court, which I think was, again, the conservatives or the conservative side of it, the side he's on it, won it in terms of limiting the Environmental Protection Agency. The Environment and Protection Agency is trying to limit things like mercury and toxic pollutants. But he comes down on that. But on this one, he also said, the court invalidates the marriage laws of more than half the states and orders the transformation of a social institution that was formed as a basis of human society for millennia. For the Kalahari Bushmen, for the Han Chinese, for the Carthaginians and the Aztecs. Just who do we think we are? Well, we got a constitution, and these guys did not have one.
Well, for example,
it's that simple. Yeah. And that's such a direct slap at the founding document.
It's an argument based on common, based on tradition rather than law and the Constitution. And it's interesting that you've got the super constitutional look at all the stuff guys arguing in that way when they want to oppose something, right, Mike?
Exactly. I'm just speechless. Once again, if the nation seems to be behaving further to the right than it is. But redistricting and the Supreme Court, the two things we've been talking about this morning, are the reasons why. They are not representative of the, I don't believe, the American people in the majority.
The EPA decision, I just want to return to that in just a minute.
Sure.
It's somewhat limited. It's more limited than people have interpreted it, in that it requires the EPA to look at the cost involved, the business cost of its rulings prior to issuing the rulings. So it's a matter of timing. You know, those costs were for the ruling on the power plants were considered, but after they had decided to make the limitation or the restriction. And if you think that isn't important, I just came back from Minnesota and in the Northland. Every lake in the state of Minnesota, in Michigan, Wisconsin, has warnings for eating more than one fish from the lake each, week.
Right.
So we're poisoning ourselves, yet we don't want to make any restrictions that might hurt a business.
Well, that's it. They're telling old people not to eat, old and young, not to eat more than a can of tuna a week.
I got to say, in Spain, you can't order a salad hardly without a can of tuna fish on top of it. The one we should bring up before we head out is health care subsidies. And that was decided 6-3.
Yes.
And that was an interesting case because it looks like the court is making liberal decisions, but really the cases brought before it are more and more absurd. In this case, this is my take on it, guys.
Please
tell me what you think. But the case was, there's a phrase in the healthcare law says the state will do something like that. Well, the state can mean the United States or the single state.
Right.
And it's just an ambiguity in the way the law was written. In the intention to provide subsidies to everyone, there is no ambiguity. It would be it's absolutely ridiculous to argue that there was any intention when they were writing the law to take that interpretation.
Even the people who wrote the law, said that their intent was to allow subsidies from the federal government. It was never a question amongst the people who wrote the law.
So they took one little phrase and they tried to destroy the health care wall because it would cut all the subsidies to what the programs that the feds are running.
Against that, I heard, is that they used to be, before we became so partisan, you would pass a technical bill after you passed the bill.
Right.
Something like the ACA would go through the Affordable Care Act. And then it's going to have technical flaws. So nobody would argue with the technical bill going through to straighten out language errors and other technical errors. That doesn't happen anymore,
I think it doesn't. I think the Republicans, they always used to do these kind of corrections. So if the state is ambiguous, then they can go in and say the state, the United States, or the several states of the United States. States can.
Well, that's
they can rewrite
do.
It so that it's unambiguous. But they don't. The Republicans have weighed. They've tried to cripple affordable health care is to use any method. And so the court decision was 6-3. But, I cannot believe some of the arguments from now. I won't go into them. Are the three most conservative justices.
Should have been 9-0. This is another thing should have been 9-0.
It should have been 9-0. But they argued that, it's Scalia, as you were talking about earlier, Mike, Scalia and Gary, that Scalia's thing was an absolute interpretation of the way it was written.
We would also mention Kennedy. Some people are talking about him as being the second most powerful, person in the United States. He's the swing vote. He's a conservative. But he is the one who seems to be less partisan. And so he's the five, the fifth vote that
right.
Has gone in favor of some of the more obviously corrected decisions, in my view.
Well, the Supreme Court is a study, and we're talking about a branch of government that is complex and huge. In some ways, it seems like it has the most simple. Article 3 gives is the most simple and direct, but between the decisions, between the politics, between the aides, between the writing, both the majority and the minority, that the words that they put down on paper are used to guide federal and state laws for generations.
And the Constitution says very little in detail about what the Supreme Court should look like or what its jurisdiction is.
Before we run out of time,
the age limit would have been a good idea.
I think we should give a shout out to our sponsor.
Who?
Democrats of the Red Rocks, better known to us as DOR.
Yes.
They're
going to start up the breakfast again pretty soon.
Yes, it's a hiatus for the summer, but
right.
It will be starting in August, I believe. Right?
Next week, we'll talk about either we'll have Katie Hobbs or we'll be talking about the Greek crisis, which may seem far away from Americans. But the way this thing is structured, there are real lessons in economics.
I'm going to tell you, it's
politics for the American
oligarchs
people
and the banks. The oligarchs and the banks. It's a mafia plan. The same thing could happen here easily. It's not that the Greeks spend too much money on social programs. Well, that's what we'll talk about next week, unless we get Katie Hobbs, a wonderful state senator.
Yeah, she's a great, great state
representative.
Yeah.
Anyway, a good Democrat,
right? And
they do exist.
The Greek crisis is the argument now is between the economists who think austerity is a bad idea and the politicians who want to keep doing it.
But you can find this show on VVID.org, Verde Valley Independent Democrats.
.org.
You've been
been listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 o'clock news, right here on AM 780 KAZM. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.